Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and we're here to talk about not one, not two, but three games because we're really lazy and we missed a week. And also, Tottenham were like off for like a month, so that kind of threw off our schedule. But anyway, we're here to talk about all of them. Let's get to our panel of cartilage-free captain adjacent experts. Let's start off with my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how's it going today?
It's going great. I am testing out my new Juul.
Jesus
Christ.
To see
if that can help me quit smoking cigarettes. So far, so good.
How many cigarettes are you smoking tonight?
Well, it's hard to say.
Is there one you're smoking right now, maybe?
No, I finished that one cigarette.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm back to my creme brulee-flavored Juul pod. And, vibing with this thing.
Let's move on to someone else so we can talk about something at least vaguely dignified. Rob, how's it going with you tonight?
Good. It's almost mid-April here in New York, and my heat is on for some reason, and I thought we were here to talk about WrestleMania.
No, we're here to talk about Juuls. This is now a Juul podcast.
Oh. Well, we can talk about Danny Rose, stiff army people. That's kind of like WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like WrestleMania.
All right. I'm excited then.
Finally, we have back from a beer run. It is our wily veteran, Brian Ashlock. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm proud to be a part of the most podcast ever, because obviously it's just Juuls, beer, wrestling. What other niche things can we talk about?
I mean, there's a lot, but I think you know, given it's WrestleMania week, I'm really curious. What do you think of Kofi Kingston's title win at WrestleMania?
I thought it was super deserved. He'd just been overlooked for shots for so long, and he finally got shot, and he made Daniel Bryan look like an asshole, which was cool. And, but WrestleMania was too long, and I fell asleep during the Triple H Batista match.
Yeah, that's a lot of people did. Did you actually watch WrestleMania?
Yeah, except for the, 20 minutes that I missed of the Batista Triple H match.
Well, before Ben literally buys a plane ticket to murder the rest of us, let's get into the games we have to talk about. You know, let's move for something that Ben definitely doesn't want to talk about, which is professional wrestling, to something that I am sure he wants to talk about. It's been a while, so I want to hear all your thoughts. Ben, let's start with you. Give me one thing you took away from the Liverpool match.
I mean, I just want to know, did Ronda Rousey keep her shoulders up because she's not used to being pinned and doesn't have, the technical skill to sell that for her opponent? Or were they trying to work something where, you know, Becky's victory was undeserved or somehow has...
Ben, let's move on to something more painful. Liverpool, what was your big takeaway from the Liverpool match? It's been a while, but...
Yeah, I mean, other than the calamity that ended that game, because Hugo Lloris is a fraud and should never start for Tottenham Hotspur again, as we'll discuss later... You know, it was a very good match, and I thought we looked really good and we're the better team. And, you know, I think if we keep playing like we did against Liverpool in our next couple of matches in the new stadium, I think we're going to win some games.
So, let me ask you this, just as a follow-up, because just to skip around a little bit. Are we capable of playing that way without Harry Kane?
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, thanks, Ben. That's.
I mean, look, I don't know why we're talking about this now. That seems really stupid.
Yeah, we don't really need to do foreshadowing on a podcast.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I forgot. We should do this as a linear narrative, guys.
If Harry Kane were hypothetically to get injured in the matches sometime after Liverpool and before we play again this weekend, you know, I think. It would ask some questions of the squad and, you know, Pochettino, are we going to try Fernando Llorente up top? Are we going to let Heung-Min Son play up top? Is Lucas Moura going to be a striker again? You know, we've seen the team weather a storm like that in the past with some success. But, you know, I think at this stage in the season, Harry Kane's already been injured enough time that I think it's highly unlikely that in the weeks following the Liverpool match that Harry Kane would get injured again and be out for, say, the rest of the season.
Well,
that doesn't seem likely to me.
Thank God we kept this to be a, we kept this as a productive, logical discussion. I'm really, really happy about that. Rob, going off of what Ben said a little bit, I'm curious. There's a lot of talk about, I was not surprised to see this from fans. I was surprised to see it from journalists and pundits. Tottenham need to think about moving on from Hugo Lloris. I guess this is a bit of a two-part question. One, should we? Two, is this in any way likely?
Well, he's a drunk and a fraud, as Ben said. So if there was a scenario where we could possibly move on from him, yeah, maybe that's the thing we might want to consider, because he's had some shocking moments in this season, and he's in his 30s, and he is the type of keeper who depends on his incredible quickness and reflexes, and those are the kinds of things that might just suddenly disappear, like with Iker Casillas at Real Madrid. But then you get into the reality, like, we need, like, seven new players at various different positions, so maybe trying to find a new keeper is not on the top of the list, and the backup keeper is not actually any good, although seem to, like, have this backup quarterback fascination with him. He's been, like,
so
okay
just,
when he's played,
real
but...
quick. Have you seen how handsome he is?
He's quite handsome, Ben. And
okay.
Just as handsome
no,
sitting on
okay.
the bench.
Okay, I rest my case.
Okay, well, Tottenham Handsome Spur Football Club should probably continue to employ a good keeper. And Hugo is a pretty good keeper still. And it's unlikely we're going to find a better one if we're spending whatever our limited resources are on three midfielders, two fullbacks, Eriksen replacements, and so on and so forth.
Well, Brian, getting into this a little bit, is Hugo having a worse season, as bad a season as some people say? Because I mean, I feel like this is, putting aside the drunk driving charge, because I'm just talking about on-the-field stuff here, it's, I don't know, this feels like slightly worse than usual, but when you consider that this is during a run of games where, you know, Hugo saved three major penalties, that at least two of which have gotten Spurs points, I don't know, like, I think maybe Spurs should be thinking maybe long-term about when it's time to replace Lloris, but I feel like people are overreacting a little bit to this year. Maybe the drunk driving arrest has something to do with that.
I mean, you know, he has had some high-profile errors in high-profile games. I mean, he had the screw-up in the World Cup final, which didn't ultimately mean anything because France were winning, like, what, 3-0 or 3-1 at the time. And, you know, he's had this in the Liverpool match, and there have been others that I just can't think of off the top of my head. I seem to recall seeing a stat, you know, following the Liverpool match, there was something like he's second in the league in terms of goalkeepers who have errors leading to goals behind only Pickford. So, I mean, I guess it's been, like, not a particularly great season, but I guess you also have to balance that out with, you know, he's played some really, really good games this year and won us some key points, like, you know, like we'll talk about later in this show. And, you know, he's saved penalties earlier in the season. He's had some good performances in the Champions League. So, you know, I think you just can't take the good with the bad with Hugo.
Well, we'll get to Hugo a little bit more, but the Liverpool game was encouraging yet disappointing. But I think what was most encouraging was the next two games, which were played at Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium. What I found really sort of stunning about, I mean, I think we haven't been to the stadium. We're all in America, obviously. But what I find really incredible, beyond just the noise and how it looks, and I think it definitely looks cool. I love the cockerel on the roof and how sort of what a stunning visual that is, and just the way that cop looks. I'm amazed by just the universal praise of it. Like, even the Guardian could barely muster itself to write some against modern football sentiments about the new stadium. And just everyone, Spurs fans, you know, journalists, I'm stunned at how positive the coverage has been. The worst I've seen is, like, you know, the other team's fan base is making trophy cabinet jokes, which was probably going to happen no matter what was going on with the new stadium. Looking at the Palace game, I mean, I don't know. Ben, do you think it's made a difference? Do you think, you know, it's affected our play at all? Or what do you just think of the new place?
Well, I mean, from a purely aesthetic and atmosphere standpoint, I think the new stadium is unbelievable. You know, the crowd looks just thrilled to finally be in a place to call their own after 2 years in Wembley wilderness. I think that atmosphere has definitely been improved over the last couple matches, with players or fans just in full voice. And, you know, you can really tell that Daniel Levy put a lot of effort into making sure that that was a fan-friendly stadium in terms of atmosphere. You know, they're close to the pitch. The sound is good. That South Stand cop is unbelievable. You know, I think the TIFO thing that they did for Man City, which I guess maybe we can talk about later, but that was really cool.
Ben, what TIFO? Come on, what game? We're talking about Crystal Palace.
All right, I'm sorry. I got lost. Christian Eriksen took me in the TARDIS, and my timeline got all jumbled. So, I mean, the stadium looks great, and I have no idea how much it actually impacted, you know, the performances, but I like to think it did a little bit.
Well, certainly by the amount of shots we were taking. I mean, everybody seemed to want to score that first goal.
Oh, yeah. In the Palace match, it was, I mean, you can see Harry Kane's heartbreaking too when Sonny scored the first one, because you know how much he wanted it to be him. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the important thing was getting through that first game with a win and a comfortable win, and not, you know, spursing it up, so to speak. We played really well, and we were knocking on the door for a really long time. And, you know, I think once Sonny scored, it was a pretty foregone conclusion that we were going to win. But, you know, I think there's a real sense of relief. I mean, when Danny Rose collapsed to his knees on the pitch and, like, prayed to God and thanked the heavens, I think as much as he was celebrating a goal, I think he was also crying out in relief that we didn't fuck it up. That's my body language read on Danny Rose, at least.
Always the most important part of fandom, body language expertise. But I thought it was very interesting in terms of this, considering Spurs' struggles recently. I know we talked about how well they played at Liverpool, and I think, you know, Dele probably has a big role to play in this, is that, you know, we just seemed so much better against Palace, and I think if this had been a game or two down the line, we would have played even better, because we were doing a lot of hero ball shots in the first half. But other than that, it was just, I don't know, God, I don't think Palace mounted a really substantive attack until, you know, 7 minutes left in the game, when it was sort of a foregone conclusion. It was a really good performance. I mean, Brian, do you have any big takeaways from the stadium?
It's real loud. Like, even just on TV, it's amazing to go from what Wembley sounded like at the end to that. But, I mean, other than that, it's amazing. Like, it's everything we were promised for, I don't know, since 2005, when they first announced the Northumberland Development Project or whatever. You know, like, it's... I don't think I ever thought it would actually happen. And then even when they started building it, I was like, something will happen. There'll be an Indian burial ground, or, you know, it'll just fall over. And then, I don't know, it's real now. And I'm just blown away by how, like Ben said, how universally well-received it is, how good it looks on TV, how good it looks in person. We have the coolest stadium in all of football.
Big words.
Well, somebody hasn't been to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and seen Atlanta United play.
That's true, I haven't.
No, this looks better.
It's no Yankee Stadium.
Thank God. Oh, America's finest soccer venue. Rob, do you think, I mean, we've heard for years that there's going to be a little bit of austerity around Spurs with the new stadium being built. You know, I think a lot of that's based off of what happened to Arsenal after the Emirates opened. I mean, we haven't gotten a stadium name sponsor yet. Presumably they're looking for $20 million a year for that. I mean, we're just seeing, and this is all anecdotal, so we might be blowing smoke up our ass, between the Swiss Ramble report about how much money we made last year without player sales, and then you look at, like, I mean, we're seeing some ridiculous figures about how much money they made in just the first two games on, like, concessions and stuff.
I mean, they said they sold 800,000 pounds worth of beer in the first half against Crystal Palace.
I mean, there's a level which, and Rob, I'm curious for your thoughts. Do you think we're going to see some austerity at Spurs? I mean, or do you think this is really going to dramatically affect our transfer budget?
I mean, the difficult thing parsing that is that we've already been going through the period of austerity. It's almost like they, you know, the not signing a single player for a couple of transfer windows was them sort of getting a head start on it. But the numbers in terms of the club's revenue before moving into the stadium are impressive enough that, you know, I kind of think that maybe we've seen the penny pinching, and starting this summer they might actually up the spending.
Or at least continue to spend, or like actually spend.
Begin the spend. spend something.
That seems unlikely.
If there is any sort of penny pinching in the short term, it's probably offset with player sales, which is sort of what the idea was last summer. But nobody got sold last summer, and a bunch of guys are probably going to get sold this offseason. So there's going to be money. I think you're seeing sort of the long-term plan kind of really take effect, and all the track that's been laid for the past 10 years is, I think a lot of us thought maybe last summer was when we were going to really see them go for it, but with the way things look now, I think this might be it. This might be the beginning of them really putting their chips in.
So I think we have a game we all want to talk about. Before I move on, Brian, do you have anything? Did anything about the actual game against Palace stand out to you?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, Sonny scored good. The first goal in the new stadium. I mean, that was kind of fun.
That was cool. Harry Kane got denied a penalty that would have allowed him to score the second goal because Christian Eriksen was too quick to put in a rebound. You know, we didn't fuck it up and concede. Andrew Townsend didn't get to play and score. There's some interesting subplots, but it was just one of those things where you just like the moment as a whole was just so good that, you know, that was really the only thing that I could take away from it, was just how good it felt to be in our own stadium.
Also, so, just that we were done with all of the, like, when are they going to open the stupid stadium?
Oh, yeah, Christ, that I'd never have to hear anybody say, you know, oh, well, you don't have a home, and then never be finished. Yeah, never have to hear that
again. Yeah, we're done. They have a stadium. It's awesome. Let's go, like, win some soccer matches.
I was also extremely glad we won this game, just so we don't have to hear, we didn't draw or lose, and we don't have to hear this, like, oh, when are Spurs going to be able to finally win in their new stadium? Is it the curse of the new stadium? And I'm very glad we didn't have to live through that.
Yeah, I'd way rather the narrative for the end of the season be, oh, it was unfair that Tottenham got to play those last few games in the new stadium because they won all of those home games.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other way around, yeah. Then us lose them all and then be going into next season and everybody be like, will they ever win one? You're just like, oh, fuck.
But, you know, I think maybe because it was such a comprehensive win, or it was such a relatively comfortable win, in a lot of ways for me that initial match felt like a bit of a, friendly, but a bit of a ceremony as opposed to a real game. I think the stadium's coming out party was really the Champions League match against Manchester City this past Tuesday. Ben, I mean, I thought the atmosphere was on a different level in that game, starting with the TIFO that you didn't spoil for everyone. What did you think of, you know, sort of Tottenham's first Champions League match in their new home?
Uh, What's a TIFO?
I don't know, Ben. What is a TIFO?
No, I don't, like, why don't English clubs do TIFO? Is that is there a reason behind that? And, like, why did we decide to do one? I don't understand. TIFOs are awesome, and it was very cool. And, like, I saw some fucking douchebags on Twitter being like, oh, they're holding up plastic bags. Like, fuck you. Like, whatever they're holding up in aggregate, it looked fucking awesome. And I don't understand why everybody doesn't do that every single week.
I think it's because it requires a certain level of fan coordination that doesn't really exist. Like, the fan coordination in England mostly exists around drinking and fighting, and not so much around supporting the team and being loud, which is kind of the culture that you see in, like, with, like, some of the ultra groups or just fan groups in Germany and France. And
so you're saying we need more ultras groups at Tottenham?
I mean, I'm going to pull back from that characterization of what I said, but yeah, basically.
Okay. Well, I am looking to found a new Tottenham Hotspur Ultras group.
Oh, no.
If anybody is interested, please DM me on Twitter. No, but it was really cool. And, like, I don't even care if it's, like, manufactured by the club who, like, puts all the shit on the seats for us. Like, that's fine. I'd rather the club do something like that than play, like, We Will Rock You over a fucking loudspeker.
Like, Duel of the Fates, maybe?
Duel of the Fates is great. I love Duel of the Fates, okay. And I was really excited. I don't think they played it.
Yes, they did.
At a Palace.
No. They played at the Champions League match, though.
Yeah, they played at the Champions League match, and I was like, oh, shit, are we getting rid of Duel of the Fates? Because we're, like, making a clean break now that we're at our new home. But I was very relieved to hear it at the opening of the Man City game. Because Duel of the Fates kicks ass. And I don't care if I'm a nerd and I like Star Wars, but it's a really fun song.
But you don't like Star Wars. That's the problem.
Has anybody else noticed that the new PA system in our stadium also seems to be really loud? Like, I can much more clearly hear music and PA announcements while watching on TV.
It's state of the art.
Like, I don't know. It actually works. Yeah.
Different.
Maybe that was the difference at White Hart Lane, where it's just some guy shouting from a box with a megaphone, maybe.
He's just humming along to the song through a megaphone. Yeah. I think that's what happened. But yeah, the game itself was great. The atmosphere was great. I mean, you could hear, again, all the chants coming through on the TV. I can't imagine what that must have been like live to, like, watch that happen in person. That would have been just incredible. You know, I'm saving my plane fare to go watch the Champions League final. otherwise, I would have gone. But, yeah, I mean, and it was, again, another really good performance from Spurs. You know, we had a little bit of a rocky first 15 minutes, but, you know, I thought until Harry Kane went off, we looked easily the dominant side. City defended pretty well. You know, they managed to force us into worse shots maybe than we had deserved, given, like, the opportunities we created for ourselves, and Ederson made a couple good saves. But, you know, I was... Once Harry King went off injured, I thought that was it. I thought it was over. I thought, you know, we were going to lose. And City clearly smelled blood at that point. And it didn't happen.
Well, it's really funny they smelled blood, because they also switched off like someone unplugged their FIFA controller when Son got that ball in the box. Which that's probably the best part of the whole thing for me, is watching them all think it went out of bounds. And nope, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Sonny for, like, keeping that alive after he fucked up his first touch. I have no idea how nobody closed him down.
Because Delph was too busy complaining that he was offside and that the ball was out of bounds.
I think Pochettino got in Delph's head. I really do. He was yelling at that guy for, like, 30 minutes. And then after the game, he gave him a real condescending, like, pat on the cheek and a hug. Like, I know it was you, Fredo. And it breaks my heart, kind of thing. But Pochettino was merciless to Delph. I don't know if you guys...
Good, fuck him. That. Fuck him. Like, if he scored that goal, I swear to fucking God. After, like, knocking Kane out for the year, if he scored a winning fucking goal, I would have... Ugh.
Yeah, well, there's that moment when Delph, like, teed one up on that edge of the box, and I was like, this motherfucker.
So I think there's a lot of talking points in this game. Let's go back to the beginning. Danny Rose getting a penalty on VAR, or giving away a penalty, I guess, on VAR. Rob, was this – I don't know. What'd you think?
Okay, so I was – I may or may not have been watching this on the Spanish broadcast on my phone underneath my desk at work. Hypothetically, let's say I was.
How all true fans watch sports.
I didn't necessarily get the most clear analysis from the announcers about what actually happened and what the ruling was. But
how much Spanish do you speak, Rob?
I mean, enough to understand most of what's happening in a soccer match, but...
Okay, all right, just kidding, because that's a lot more than I do, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not even that, like, I didn't understand what they were saying. It's that they didn't seem particularly sure about what was going on. But that was some bullshit. Like, I don't care if that was a proper application of the rule, the handball rule, the VAR regulations, or whatever. That was fucking bullshit.
There's something particularly galling about, you know, using VAR when the other team doesn't even appeal for a penalty, which...
What is Danny Rose supposed to do with his arm when he is falling to the ground?
Well, put it in Fernandinho's face, I think, is where it's supposed to go.
Well, maybe that's what he was trying to do, but Fernandinho's too far away. It's just like, in order to properly comply with the rule, you have to do some body contortion that's not really humanly possible and doesn't make any sense. It's just so ridiculous.
I just think the main problem with it is that the rules are not written in such a way, or the laws, rather. The laws of the game are not written in such a way that is conducive to VAR. And, you know, you have so many gray areas, especially with, like, the handball rule, where we've gotten, you know, referee advisory things over the years, like, oh, did the ball play the hand, or is the hand in an unnatural position, and, you know, all these other sorts of things. And none of those sorts of advisory ways of looking at the rule make any sense in an era where we have VAR. And so the rule...
I'm sorry. Can I just interrupt you? Did I miss the memo? Are we calling it VAR and not VAR? Is that what we call it?
Yes.
We call it VAR?
Yes.
That's a thing.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, we can call it VAR. What makes you
I don't know. I feel like I'm having like a Mandela effect moment where like I've never heard it called VAR in my life. I've only heard it called VAR, and now you're all just rattling off VAR super casually, like, yeah, of course it's VAR. It's just called VAR. And
I feel like
I'm like going quietly insane.
Well, Ben, maybe if you hadn't watched all those games at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and watched them on TV, you would know this.
Well, when I'm at the stadium, they don't say the name of what's happening. They just draw a little box in the sky and pretend like that means something. And then I'm supposed to accept that they have a penalty against Brad Guzan.
Yeah, you're supposed to go, oh, VAR, okay.
Anyway, Brian, carry on with your VAR talk.
Right. So, as I was saying, the handball rule, as it is now, it doesn't work with VAR or VAR or whatever we're going to call it. Like, I understand the application in this case. Look, the ball hit his hand. It was in the box. It was a penalty. All right, fine, whatever. You know, I agree with Rob. It's bullshit, but like that is what the rule says. So okay, but like there needs to be a way that the rule is written so that it's not just like, oh well, yeah, bad luck. I guess that did kind of hit his hand. He didn't really mean to do that, but yeah. Definitely hit his hand, so we got to give a penalty. Like, there has to be a way that the rule is written, common sense, to make sense, that removes that from being a penalty.
And that's the thing that's like, the rule as written is intentional handball in the box. And because no one can know what an actual player's intent is, we have all these like kind of proxy guidance where it's like, well, was it in unnatural position, well then if the ball hit his hand, then it must have been intentional. You know, it's like it's all fudging around the edges trying to get to was this intentional or not. And we have no good way to answer that question. And I think when you have to, I mean, we saw him, he watched this thing on slow-mo like 5 or 6 times before he finally made his ruling. Like, if that's what it takes to decide that this is an intentional handball, then that's a fucking horseshit dumbass rule. Because that doesn't make any sense. And I think that's a big thing with VAR, is it has exposed the flaws in the underlying rules, which are bad and dumb to begin with, but extra bad when you put them under a microscope of slow-mo and a ref watching that specific incident on replay 5, 6, 7 times until they can come up with an interpretation. Like, you know, most fouls in the box, most handballs in the box are not egregious enough to warrant an 85% chance of scoring in the first place, let alone now all the haziness around how do you interpret the rule, and then the extra layer of now we get to watch this on slow motion replay a dozen times before we make a decision. Like, it requires like a huge re-envisioning of what the rules in soccer is, or where the penalty box is, or, you know, create alternative solutions to a penalty for when things like that happen. Like, maybe you got to take a penalty from, like, at the top of the D outside the penalty box or something, because the rules cannot hold with this new technology, because the rules are fundamentally broken in the first place.
Yeah, and I think if the scenario in which Danny Rose had been sliding in to block the shot or had committed the handball was slightly different. Like, if we're talking about the Kyle Walker-Peters penalty that he gave away earlier this year, where he jumps into the air and has his arm up above his head and the ball hits his hand, like, if VAR would have caught that, I'd have been like, yep, all right, you got us. That one was dumb. But, like, the circumstances, like Rob said when he was earlier, was, like, he's sliding in. What is he supposed to do with his arm? You know, where is he supposed to put it as he is sliding to the ground? Is it supposed to be, like, tucked by his side? I mean, is it supposed to be, you know, across his chest? Like, what is, you know, unnatural?
What is a natural position?
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, like, there are tons of players sliding around in any given soccer game. You can watch a baseball game. Like, your arms go up when you go down. Like, that's just – I don't know why that is. I don't know, you know, but that's just – that's what happens all the time. And I don't know. I just – like everybody said, it was the right call. It was a handball. The ball did hit his hand. The hand was away from the body. I get it. God, what a dumb call.
Hey, how did that whole sequence end again?
No, it ended with
didn't lie.
Yeah, it ended with our backup keeper stopping the goal. So that was pretty good. Was that more Hugo or Aguero, Rob?
I was watching on a very small screen underneath my desk, but it didn't look like a very good penalty to me. It was one of those things like Lloris could have guessed the wrong direction and then obviously miss it completely, but he guessed right, and then it looked like a fairly easy save. So I'd put it more on Aguero taking a shitty penalty. Although I did hear one, like, Zapruder analyst saying something about Lloris jumping off his line early, but that guy can just fuck off. I don't give a shit.
I understand why Arsenal fans were watching this game, but, you know.
Yeah, I haven't seen the frame-by-frame breakdown of it yet, or the, like, shot.
Don't forget, Harry Kane also encroached in the box before the penalty was taken, so we should rule it out and let him take it over.
Oh, well, Harry can't play anymore, so that's unfortunate. Ben, how dumb was the Harry Kane injury?
Very dumb. Like, I get that Harry Kane loves soccer and, like, just throws his body around like it's made of adamantium and nothing can hurt him, but what are you doing, like, throwing yourself into that 50-50 when you have weak baby ankles to begin with?
Did you really think it was that reckless?
I mean, I don't think it was that reckless, but it's like,
I mean, I feel like this is the kind of shit that's just going to happen when you're a player like Kane. I mean, I don't think you're going to get this out of his game. I think it was more unfortunate than sloppy.
It was unfortunate, but I mean, like, you know, Delph was following through kicking the ball and his foot landed on Harry Kane's ankle. Like, I don't think it was deliberate or malicious. I think maybe he, like, planted it a little harder than he needed to out of petulance. But, you know, again, it was, like, in a non-threatening area, just unnecessary for Kane to do. And, you know, I think even if, like, all things being equal, like, I'm fine with it in a broad sense, but given that he has now had several ankle injuries and can't seem to stay on the pitch, like, he needs to start being a little more careful with his body. You know, he's not a defensive midfielder. He's not a center back. He doesn't need to – his livelihood is not built on, like, putting himself into 50-50 challenges. I just think he needs to get a little more cautious because he's going to ruin his career.
So we talked about this a little bit earlier, at least Ben, you mentioned it, that, you know, we played really good. I think we did an excellent job of controlling City while Kane was in the game and really having the better of the play. Now, we should point out that De Bruyne and Sané were not playing for City, which is a little perplexing to me, but so we'll see what we do against them in the next game. But, I mean, do you think how we played after Kane went off gives us any sort of indication of what Spurs are going to look like from now on? This is, of course, assuming Dele Alli hasn't broken his hand or wrist, which it's a little vague right now whether or not that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the performance after Kane went off wasn't super strong. Like, it was okay. We created a few good attacking moves. We obviously got the goal. You know, I know stats have come out today of actually our record without Harry Kane is better than with Harry Kane this season. I don't really buy that. I mean, he's just a phenomenal world-class player, and no team is improved by losing a guy like that. That said, I think there are ways we can manage in his absence that aren't totally catastrophic. But, you know, typically when we have to manage a stretch without Harry Kane, it's like, well, we've got a few games against Huddersfield and Cardiff in the league, and yeah, we're going to play Liverpool, but we're going to lose that game anyway, and lo and behold, our record looks fine. You know, right now we're talking about the business end of the season, and we have two more games against Man City coming up, one of which we cannot lose, or our Champions League campaign is over. And then, you know, if he's actually out for the season, that means he's out for the semifinal and the final, potentially, if we get that far. And so, you know, what managing a Harry Kane-less Tottenham looks like has tended to be playing mid-table sides with Heung-Min Son and Fernando Llorente up top and it working out. You know, we already are not odds-on favorites to win the Champions League. Losing a guy like Harry Kane only makes that harder. I know that should go without saying, but, you know, it's going to be a problem. A miracle can still happen, but our chances for winning the Champions League, even if we get through Man City, have just gone down dramatically.
But you think this dramatically affects our ability to get into next year's Champions League? You don't think it does?
I mean, I think we have a very favorable schedule. We play, you know, Man City away, which, again, we can afford to lose that game given,
we can't, assuming
Arsenal losing to Everton.
Just for some context for this conversation, assuming that the other teams we're playing against run the table or as close as they can to it, because Chelsea and United have to play each other. Assuming two out of those three teams run the table, Spurs can afford to Spurs need to take 12 out of 15 non-City points. So we can basically afford to lose the City game and one other. And if we do that, we'll be in the Champions League next year.
Right. And of our non-City games, 4 out of 5 are at home. We mostly play bad teams. You know, we have a pretty good schedule where winning 4 out of 5 besides City is eminently doable, even without Harry Kane. So I think we have pretty good chances of getting into the Champions League for next season. But, you know, I'm still dreaming about winning this thing. And I feel a lot worse about that today.
Rob, what did you think of Spurs' post-Kane performance? How does that inform how you think about the following fixtures?
I mean, I think Ben is right, but we've been doing that basically all season, playing without our best players and moving people around and coming up with new formations and weird, crazy tactics. So, like, we'll just have to do it again. You know, Sun's best form of the season was largely the last time that Kane was out, and he picked up the scoring load, so we're just going to have to do that again. You know, if Dele is also out, suddenly our midfield, which was finally starting to get a little better and a little more solid, is kind of...
Well, I think, yeah, you could see the impact Dele made. I mean, the last two games, we just look like... Or the last three games, rather. We've looked like an entirely different team, almost.
Yeah, no, he's... I mean, amazingly, he's underrated, and we've missed him a lot. But, yeah, again, like, we've been having to make these adjustments over and over and over again this season because we keep losing guys. So, yeah, we'll be worse without our best player and maybe arguably our second best player, but we're playing winnable games. We're in the new stadium. You know, that intangible shit is real, I think. We saw it in the last season of White Hart Lane where we didn't lose a single game. Like, that stuff really does make a difference. So, and also the teams around us have some pretty tough games. Arsenal's schedule on paper is not that bad, but
yeah, they haven't won an away game since like November. I think actually November in any competition.
They've got some away games against teams that are like between 7th and 11th in the table. So, and they play like absolute dog shit against Everton away. So, you know, it's not guaranteed that Chelsea, Arsenal, United actually run the table. I think we just need to like keep winning games and keep finding ways to do it.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out, you look at our schedule, and aside from City, who's obviously a tough matchup, and honestly, I think that's going to be an extremely weird game after playing each other so much in such close proximity. I mean, I think our toughest games are against West Ham, which shouldn't be a tough game, but I think West Ham always plays us a lot harder than I'd like them to play us. And them fucking our season up a little bit feels like a very West Ham thing to do at the end of the year. And then on the last day of the season, we have Everton. Now, hopefully, Everton's on the beach, and we still should be able to beat Everton, but I don't know. Maybe I'm overreading a little bit too much in their performance against Arsenal last week. But I mean, other than that, we don't have a lot of tough games, especially with, you know, most of them at home. So hopefully, you know, that won't really affect, you know, us in a negative way.
We don't play games on spreadsheets, Greg. But
good point.
We should do well. We should win we should win our home games against bad teams. At this point, the City game, who knows? Like, we could get completely run over, or we could get completely run over in the second leg of the Champions League tie and pull something out.
No, clearly, clearly the preferred move here is we get through them in the Champions League, and then we lose the league. So
we lose to
so them Liverpool doesn't win the title.
Exactly. We will lose to them on purpose. It will not be because they're better than us. Because we're doing them a favor.
I just want to mention that we are still on track for my prediction of what would be the most Spursy way to lose the Champions
League.
Oh,
God, don't do this.
Ryan.
Well, I'm just saying, which is, you know, to get either a credible result in the first leg and then get absolutely wrecked at the Etihad.
Well, let's talk about that. Brian, what do you expect in the second leg of the Etihad? I mean, I don't expect De Bruyne and... Sané to be on the bench. Well, maybe Sané, but...
No, I expect exactly what I just said. I mean, I expect us to get...
You think they're going to take us apart?
Like 4-1, 5-0, something absolutely...
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing about that game is, like, if we score at least one, they need to score three. And that's certainly not outside of City's, you know, ability to do, but... The fact that they didn't get an away goal does make this sort of an interesting tie. I don't love our chances without Kane, but who the hell knows?
Yeah, I mean, I more don't like our chances without having a midfield. You know, Dele Alli was kind of knitting together our non-existent midfield. And now if he's done,
So, you know, is Eric Dyer ever going to be healthy again? Will Victor Wanyama ever exist? You know, Harry Winks was just kind of okay. You know, so that's more my concern. Because if we're going to set up to, you know, kind of defend and, you know, get out of there with a draw or get an away goal or something like that, we kind of need a midfield for all those things.
Ben, do you have any expectations for the second leg?
Well, I mean, I expect to lose, but...
You expected to lose the last game, so, I mean, I certainly did.
I mean, I didn't expect to lose. I mean, I expected to lose on, like, that deeply ingrained Spurs fan level of course we're going to lose. But, like, you know, playing Man City at home with a decent lineup, you know, we had a good shot at taking it. Going to Man City, playing away with only a one-goal lead, you know, I'm less confident. But, I mean, you know, we get through on away goals at, like, 2-1, so that's not an impossible scoreline to imagine. You know, it's still alive, obviously, and City, despite being maybe the best team in the world, aren't so much better than us that it's impossible. Like, we've seen them lose to, like, Newcastle, so shit happens. Yeah, I mean... You know, if Dele's fit, I think that's a different story. If Dele's not fit, you know, and Dyer's not fit, and Wanyama's not fit, you know, it's, we have so many fucking personnel issues that it's hard to project anything about what's going to happen next week. But hey, let's fucking go for it, and let's go win the Champions League.
So, last thing to talk about, obviously with the Champions League semifinal looming, but also needing to pick up points in the league, we have Huddersfield this weekend. Obviously, already relegated Huddersfield, but Rob, how do you think Pochettino is going to approach this game? Do you think he's going to, we're recording this on Wednesday night for our listeners, point of reference, but so we don't know if Dele is actually hurt or not, that just seems to be a rumor at this point. But assuming for the sake of argument he's capable of playing, what do you do? Do you just throw on some garbage like Llorente and, you know, sort of a B-squad midfield and see if you can steal points? Or are you, like, throwing on our first team, hoping we can just pile drive them quick in the first half and maybe pull some guys off early?
What first team, Greg?
Good point. First team adjacent.
I mean, I think the only real question would be, do you start Llorente or do you start Lucas? And I think
Lucas will definitely start.
Yes, you do not start Llorente is the correct answer. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a ton of rotation just because there's not really a ton of players to rotate at this point. He's definitely going to go for it. I don't think we're really going to see a backup, a squad.
I mean, it would be nice to, like, put three past him in the first half and pull Sun at halftime, but we'll never do that. So,
we'll never do that, and I don't think Sun wants to stop playing because he really likes playing soccer. So yeah, I mean, I honestly don't think it's really going to look all that different. Some of the guys who were hurt maybe are less dead by the weekend, then we might see a couple of changes, but I really don't think it's going to look very different because nobody ever gets healthy.
Fair enough. Well, that's about it, guys. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian, where can people find you on the tubes? Well, I guess he's choosing to not share it with our listeners. He's snorting cocaine down in Florida. So, just waiting to see if he can unmute his mic. Nope, he's not. Rob, where can people find you on the Twitters?
You can find me tweeting about the new day at Reno Wallabout.
Love your newfound wrestling fandom. Oh, Brian's laptop just died. You can find him at WWE on Twitter.com talking about the New Day's title match. Finally, you can find me at SkipJack0079. Definitely no wrestling content there. For Ben, for Brian, for Rob, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I'm your host, Greg. Come on, you, Spurs,